Hello and welcome to the Thursday, May 18th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown, the producer and engineer, has put together a great show. We'll be chatting with folks from UAS about Community Day on campus. We'll get a preview into tonight's Juno Jazz and Classics concert. And then we'll talk about a student awareness campaign, Juno Stop Heroin Stop. And then Nancy DeCharney will be here with Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native leaders from the U.S. and Canada gathered this week in opposition of the Keystone XL pipeline. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The ceremony opened with a prayer as tribal leaders from the Great Sioux Nation and the Ponca Nation in the U.S. and the Blackfoot Confederacy in Canada put their signatures to the 16-page declaration. It's an agreement to coordinate efforts to fight the Keystone XL pipeline. President Donald Trump has given his thumbs up for the project, saying it will bring thousands of jobs and help boost the economy. But Native leaders in Canada and the U.S. have been fighting pipeline development for years. Councilwoman Casey Camp Horanek is with Oklahoma's Ponca Nation. She says the pipelines are killing her people, calling it environmental genocide.
We have Keystone XL coming through our territory. We know that children who are near that are 56% more likely to develop leukemia than children 10 miles away.
The Native leaders at the ceremony represent tens of thousands of Indigenous people in both countries. They say their declaration is also about treaty rights, but what they really want to do is draw attention to their fight against the $8 billion pipeline. Calgary was chosen for the declaration signing because it is where the head office of TransCanada, the pipeline developer, is located. The company says the pipeline will be environmentally friendly and create jobs. Keystone still has a number of hurdles to overcome before it can be built. Environmental groups have launched a court challenge, and regulators in Nebraska have yet to approve the pipeline route through their state. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In a departure from the previous administration, the Interior Department announced Wednesday the National Bison Range in Montana will remain in federal control. Nikki Ouellette of Montana Public Radio reports.
Last year, the Obama administration proposed to hand over management of the range to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The BIA would then transfer local control to the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. Tribal spokesperson Robert McDonald says that would have been the tribe's preferred course of action.
While the tribes continue to believe that restoration is an elegant solution to the question of national bison range management and would continue federal ownership of the land, we do look forward to further discussions with Secretary Zinke and the service regarding our common interests in natural resources stewardship.
Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke says he is committed to not selling or transferring public lands. The Fish and Wildlife Service is accepting public comment on a comprehensive conservation plan and environmental impact statement to be considered for future management goals now through June 19th. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke is accepting public comments on a review of 22 national monuments. Those are open for 60 days, but for Bears Ears in Utah, which a number of tribes hold sacred, the comment period is 15 days. From KJZZ's Fronteras Desk, Laurel Morales reports.
The accelerated comment period is challenging for people who live in remote areas of Indian country. Arizona State Representative Eric Destini visited with dozens of Navajo elders when he helped start the Bears Ears Initiative 8 years ago, and he calls the review time irresponsible.
They don't, one, have access to the internet, and if they do, they're not as astute to jump on social media. I mean, this is grandma and grandpa we're talking about, who probably, you know, don't know about this very small window. One could argue that it services, you know, a certain community and disregards an entire population.
Secretary Zinke visited Bears Ears last week and questioned whether a monument status was the best way to protect the land. The public has until May 26th to comment on Bears Ears. For National Native News, I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. This is a live show. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And right now, the weather is scattered rain showers, high in the mid-50s. Tonight, it's looking like more scattered rain showers, low in the mid-40s. And then tomorrow, numerous rain showers, high in the mid-50s, and Friday night, the same. So in the studio with us, Juno Jazz and Classics has been going on for the last week or so. We're at the end of it, and we have been so lucky. Reggie Schatz, the executive director, is here, and Evan Drachman and David Cocheron are here. They're visiting musicians, and we are, Juno, lucky community to have such renowned musicians in our midst. Evan plays cello, and David is a violinist, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
So, Evan, you've been in Alaska for 2 decades, coming
many
back
times,
and forth.
Yes.
We were talking during the break about you have a little something like 11 small planes in your very near future.
That's right. That's a separate thing. It's not really part of Juno Jazz and Classics, but I'm going to be touring some of the smaller communities right afterwards, yes.
That's great. And then, David, this is your first time in Juno?
In Alaska.
All right. Well, welcome. And David's from Atlanta, and Evan's living in Baltimore. And so let's talk a little bit about tonight's concert, and then there's two more after that. And Community Day as well, which has many more. But let's talk about tonight. What can people expect at the Jack tonight?
Well, the theme of the program is spring, and all three pieces are about spring. That's Vivaldi, Stravinsky, and Beethoven Sonata.
That's great. That's great. And do you have a favorite out of those?
I like all three of them. The Stravinsky one is the Firebird, Rite of Spring. And it's for four pianos. It's originally for orchestra, so I'm used to playing the orchestra part in Atlanta Symphony, but we get to hear it for four hands tonight, which is very exciting.
That's great. And Evan, do you have a favorite?
Do I have a favorite? Probably right. Actually the one that David's playing, the Spring Sonata, the Beethoven Spring Sonata, is probably my favorite. But four hands piano is something to watch, because often they're pieces written for two pianos, in which you have two pianos sort of interlocked and you've got the pianist playing. But when it's piano four hands, that's a different thing. You have these two pianists sort of sitting on the same bench or right next to each other, and their hands are sort of, it's fascinating to watch. Sometimes they're even crossing over, and it is at times combative. It's fascinating to watch, and especially a piece like the Stravinsky, which is fierce. So that'll be a lot of fun to watch. And the spring is magnificent work.
That's great. And there's a new piano.
Brand new piano, thanks to the Juno community supporting the Combrario series and donating for the new piano for the Jack. So, yeah, it's a brand new one, and it sounds wonderful.
That's great.
Great artists have been playing it, so that helps a whole lot.
I would imagine. If I went and played it, it wouldn't sound so great.
I noticed there's a sign on this new piano that says if you put anything on the piano, on top of the piano, there's a $500 fine. And I've never seen that before in my life. People are always trying to make people not put things on pianos because it's a flat surface, and so people want to rest their drink on it or something, which could destroy a piano. I know because as a kid, either me or one of my brothers destroyed our piano because we poured a Coke inside.
Oh.
And the whole piano had to be rebuilt. I'm sure it was one of my brothers and not me, but they think it might have been me.
We might need more people in the studio to verify.
But I've never seen a fine for putting something on. I think that's very clever.
I think that Juno's very proud of its new piano.
Exactly. Very proud.
Very
so
good.
That's really something. So when I have experts in the studio, and you both are experts in your field, world-renowned musicians, I always like to ask, When did you start playing music? Was it the same? Is it the same instrument that you're playing now? And what keeps you playing? So let's start with.
I started when I was 3.
Violin.
Yeah, violin. I'm originally from Norway, which is actually kind of similar to here. Being in Alaska reminds me a bit of Norway. And my mom plays a little bit of piano, and she wanted to play with someone to make chamber music. And she bought me a violin, and I played ever since.
Wow. And what made you, like, when was the turning point of, like, no, this is, I'm going to be a professional musician. I'm going to do this.
There wasn't one day, and the next day I decided. It was a gradual thing, and as I practiced and I got better, I started enjoying it more, and that fed off again to practicing more. So it was a gradual thing. It was never forced by my parents. Like, I had to play violin. I had to do that. But I think when I was 14, 15, 16 years old, I realized you know, I think I'll be happy doing this for the rest of my life.
Oh, that's great. What about you, Evan? Did you start with cello?
I tried many different instruments. I actually started the cello when I was 3.
Oh, wow.
But at that time, they didn't make little cellos. I mean, my grandfather found one. My grandfather was a cellist, and he found a little cello, but they didn't make strings for it, really. So you had to cut down the strings for the full-size cello, and they were too thick. You couldn't tune them. It just didn't work. There was no way. So I quit that, and then I did a series of other instruments. I played piano, I played guitar, I played drums, all kinds of things. And so when I was 11, I told my parents that I had really thought about it and I wanted to play the cello. And they said, sure you do. After all these other instruments and all these other lessons, they said, get straight A's for a semester and we'll see. So I got straight A's for a semester. And I got my first cello. And at the beginning, there's a real learning curve when you start a string instrument. There's a lot of squeaking and scratching, and there's a lot of technique just to hold the bow and make one nice sound. And so that first year and a half or 2 years, I practiced as much as 15 minutes a week, whether I needed it or not.
Wow.
At age 13, my parents suggested that I might like to go to a music camp. So they told me about this music camp in Lenox, Massachusetts, not far from Tanglewood. It was called Merrywood. And at this camp, you had an hour a day of orchestra, an hour of string quartet, an hour of chorus, an hour of private lesson, and an hour of practice each day. So 5 hours of music a day. And I started thinking, 15 minutes a week, 5 hours a day, I don't know about this. And I read a little further in the brochure, and it said that there were 3 girls to every boy.
And
I thought, maybe this wouldn't be such a bad thing. And so I went to this camp, and 2 things happened. One was just first having the experience of playing in an orchestra and making music in that way with other people and in a string quartet and with a piano. And then I discovered an old record, an old LP record, of my grandfather. My grandfather was the Russian cellist Gregor Piatigorsky. I found this record of him playing Dvorak's cello concerto with the Boston Symphony. And I went up into the attic of this camp, into this old building attic, and they had one of those drop-down record players with one speaker in the front. And I listened to the Dvorak from beginning to end, and I cried through the whole thing. And at that moment, I knew that's it. This is what I was going to do the rest of my life. And it just never varied from that. From that day forward, I would get up at 5 in the morning to practice before school. I would practice every free period at school. And when I got home, it was practice first and then do my homework. So it took me somehow. Music just took me.
When you were 13?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, that's Evan Drachman. He is a cellist, a world-renowned cellist who's in town with Juno Jazz and Classics. Thank you, Reggie, for bringing everyone to town. And David Coucheron, who's a world-renowned violinist. So I have one more question before you guys go probably practice across the way or do a sound check. What do you like about being a professional musician? I imagine that you guys are on the road a lot. You travel extensively? I could be wrong. I'm just imagining.
What I like about it is that my hobby is my work. I'm very fortunate in that way. I love playing in the symphony. I play in the Atlanta Symphony, and I do that 6 months a year, and the rest of the year I can do what I want to do, such as chamber music and chamber music festivals, which I love doing. I love playing chamber music. But I love playing the violin, and that's my work, and that's my income, and that's my world. And I think that's the part about it that I love the most.
How about you, Ed?
We're lucky. We get to do the thing in our life that we love doing, and very few people get that opportunity. So it's pretty amazing. I also travel a lot, and I get to meet people all over the country, all over the world, and they become friends, and that's an amazing experience. And in fact, I've always felt as though music gives me a kind of an in into societies, cultures. When I travel somewhere and I stay with a family, I get to know how they live. I get to meet a lot of people, make friends, and it's a different experience than being a tourist, even if you are lucky enough to be a tourist and travel all over the place. So that's another good thing. The downside is that I'm away from home a lot, and I have two boys at home. They're now 11 and 15, and it's hard. Every time I have to leave, it's hard to leave. And I used to make trips longer, especially when I came to Alaska. I used to always add days at the beginning and end, and I'd bring all my fishing equipment, and I'd try to go catch salmon and trout and halibut and anything I could. But nowadays, I try to make the trip shorter so that I can get home and be with my family more. So there is the plus minus.
And do your boys play music?
Well, the older one, Eli, who's 15, is my warrior. If he can tackle it or slam dunk it or hit it with a bat, that's what he does. And in fact, he's a very serious swimmer. That's his main sport. And although he's quite musical, he doesn't play an instrument. The younger one, Oliver, is my artist. And he's always drawing and dancing and singing, and he does a lot of musical theater. He's tried different instruments. None of them have really clicked. But I'm thinking at 11, it's about time. He better start clicking if he's going to play an instrument. So he and I are having some serious discussions about it.
About music camp, I bet. Well, thank you so much for being here and talking about rare opportunities to do the things you love. You should go tonight, Rites of Springs, with fantastic musicians at the Jack, 7 o'clock. Tomorrow, Gary Motley Trio at the Jack, 7:30. And then Community Day, which we'll talk about next with our next guest. And then the festival finale, 7:30. Anything you want to add, Reggie?
Tickets are available for everything, so come on out. I hear it's not going to be the nicest weekend, so we have a lot of good indoor activities and music to listen to.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for coming by today.
Thanks, Jen.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 18th of May, 2017. It was on this day in 1860 in Chicago, the Republican National Convention, Abraham Lincoln was nominated for president. He was nominated in part because he took a moderate position on slavery. Two of his rivals, William Seward and Edward Bates, supported the complete eradication of slavery across the country. Lincoln was only in favor of curbing the expansion of slavery and limiting it to the South. And he had won over doubters from the East, Lincoln had, with his speech in New York City just 3 months before. 1,500 New Yorkers went to see him at Cooper Union. They were astonished at how awkward and ungainly Lincoln was, which then made them even more astonished at how articulate he was as a speaker. It's the birthday of Tina Fey, born in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, 1970. Mother worked in a brokerage firm. Her father was a university grant proposal writer. She was a high school honor student in the drama club, performed in a summer theater group, went to the University of Virginia, studied playwriting and acting, moved to Chicago after college, 1992. She took night classes at the Improv Training Center, the Second City, worked at the YMCA during the day, then started performing with the Second City. She traveled around the country, did 8 shows a week. 3 years later, hired as a sketch writer for Saturday Night Live, and she quickly rose to head writer. Went on to write and star in her own comedy series, 30 Rock, came out with a memoir in 2011, Bossy Pants, went to number one on the New York Times bestseller list. And in response to people who said that women are not funny, Tina Fey said, "I don't like Chinese food, but I don't write articles trying to prove that it doesn't exist." It's the birthday of the director and film producer Frank Capra, born in Sicily in 1897, came to Los Angeles as a boy, worked odd jobs at the Columbia Studios, and began making his films in 1928. It Happened One Night, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, You Can't Take It With You, Arsenic and Old Lace, and It's a Wonderful Life in 1946. Frank Capra, who said, "I wanted to glorify the average man, not the guy at the top, not the politician, not the banker, just the ordinary guy whose strength I admire, whose survivability I admire." Here's a poem for today by Emily Dickinson. "I cannot dance upon my toes, no man instructed me, but oftentimes among my mind a glee possesseth me that, had I ballet knowledge, would put itself abroad in pirouette to blanch a troupe or lay a prima mad. And though I had no gown of gauze, no ringlet to my hair, nor hopped to audiences like birds, one claw upon the air, nor tossed my shape in eider balls, nor rolled on wheels of snow, till I was out of sight and sound, the house encore me so. Nor any, no, I know the art I mention easy here, nor any placard boast me, it's full as opera. I Cannot Dance Upon My Toes," a poem by Emily Dickinson. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, offering Snapshot, a device that adjusts insurance rates based on safe driving habits. Now that's Progressive. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. And by the Poetry Foundation, you can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store, or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. It's 23 minutes past the hour, and right now it is 56 at the airport, 53 downtown, and 55 in Douglas. So we were just talking with Juneau Jazz and Classics musicians, Evan Drachman and David Coucheron. They're playing at the Jack. Speaking of the Jack, the New Jack is having an event next week. The New Jack, the Architects in You, it's entitled, and it's Tuesday, May 23rd from 5 to 7. It's a community gathering with the new Juneau Arts and Culture Architects. It's a public open house, so come check it out. And also tonight, it's casting night at Twin Lakes from 6 to 8, and that event is hosted cooperatively by Trout Unlimited, Ring Country Fly Freshers, and Alaska Fly Fishing Goods. Instructors will be there and help you out. So it's casting night at Twin Lakes. And in the studio with Jeff Brown, the producer and engineer, and myself, Joan Pardis, your Thursday host, we have Amanda Triplett from UAS, and she is here to talk to us about all sorts of things happening. Hey, congratulations on the graduation a week or so ago.
It was a wonderful event. Jeff, you were there too, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah, that's great. So let's start at the very beginning and start this Saturday. It's Community Day at the campus, University of Alaska Southeast. And what is Community Day?
So Community Day is a great gathering of local vendors, people selling some items, selling some food, some great musicians. The Jack is hosting lots of different musicians. There's an art show with elementary schools. So it's just a great event to come down, see some really cool things, and it's a free event. So some of the booths there might be charging, obviously, for food or products, but U.S. is going to be there. We're going to be giving campus tours, answering questions about classes and degree programs. So we're also going to be having cornhole, which will be a super fun game for the kids and family. So
yeah, it's a very family-friendly
event. It is a very family.
Paint fast. Mm-hmm. Face painting.
Face painting, all kinds
bouncy
of
houses usually.
Bouncy houses. Yeah, usually the library is there, the Raptor Center, just a really fun, educational, music-filled, art-filled time. So come on down to Ok Bay.
And that's from 11 to 4.
Correct. That's from 11 to 4. Plenty of parking. You'll see signs all over the place.
And now, even though the spring semester just ended, UAS is a year-round campus. Is that correct?
That is correct. So our summer schedule, we have different start dates for summer. The first summer schedule started this past Monday. But if you're still thinking about a summer class, there are some late starting classes. But fall is coming up, and that's our big, big push. So fall classes start at the end of August. So if there are people out there, seniors, parents of seniors in high school who haven't yet applied or registered or taken that leap, we, as an academic advisors, are always available Monday through Friday to come out, talk, answer questions about UAS. And if you haven't looked at the fall schedule yet, there are some really cool classes. And I've taken some of these in my time at UAS as a student, and once I graduated, I took some just for personal enrichment. Intro to Alaska Native Studies with some of our awesome professors. Anthropology 348, Anthropology of Death and Burial with Erica Hill. And that is a super neat class where they talk about these different rituals of death and burial across the world. And so many of our very talented English professors have great creative writing workshops, literature in the environment, nature writing with Professor Kevin Meyer, and it's just these awesome hands-on experiences with professors that you're not going to be able to find it anywhere else in such a beautiful and culturally enriched environment.
UAS is such a wonderful resource here in town. So if people are interested to check out, because, you know, not only matriculated students, it's our local college. Lots mm-hmm. of people just go back if they're interested in something or they want to finish something or start something as far as a matriculated degree, because you offer an associate's and four-year and then graduate programs. So where can people check things out?
So they can check things out on the website, uas.alaska.edu. They can also call 796-6100 and get someone on the phone, which is another awesome thing about our local campus here is you're going to get a real person when you call us on the phone. And, yeah, come on out. We'd love to show you, give you a campus tour, whether it's at Community Day or some other time this summer, show you our beautiful residence hall and show you where you'll be taking classes and who you will be taking classes with.
That sounds great. And then, Amanda, you are a graduate of
that
UAS.
That is correct.
So, and where did you come from to attend UAS?
I came from Ohio, and I'd never even thought of leaving the state. I happened to come across a flyer on UAS and thought, Alaska, why not? So I came up here, and I was a decent high school student. I went to a small little farm town, and instantly Juneau had hooked me, UAS had hooked me with the beautiful location. The professors actually knew my name, and I wasn't in a classroom of, 300 students just looking at a tiny little screen. It was a definite amazing experience where I knew my professors, and that's what kept me here these years.
That sounds great. All right, so you heard it here. Community Day this Saturday. Check out the full schedule, some summer schedules, and we're going to take a short break and be right back.
Great, thank you.
This is Bird Note. At this time of year, a very young male Buick's wren is beginning to learn how to sing. Like a human baby, he'll babble while he experiments with sounds and learns how to organize phrases. The young Buick's wren is listening to the song of his father, who sings a crisp, well-defined song, separated by pauses. Now, let's compare. Here's the song of our young Buick's wren. It's fuzzy, unfocused, a little rambling. Here's the adult male again. It's fully developed and unique to that male. Each adult male Buick's wren has his own set of songs. A young wren grows up learning his father's songs, but when it matures and moves to its own new territory, it will leave behind the song of its father to create a song that sounds more like its new neighbors. BirdNote would like to thank avian communication expert Donald Kruzma for his research on the Buick's wren. You'll find a link to his work at birdnote.org.
Healthy Smiles are here. On May 22nd, Search will open the doors to its updated and expanded Children's Dental Clinic. Staffed by board-certified pediatric dentists and outfitted with the latest in pediatric dental technology, the new clinic will provide your child with a lifetime of healthy smiles. All kids' smiles welcome, from the first tooth to 17 years old. Call 789-KIDS to make an appointment for your child today. This message brought to you by Search.
It is 29 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Thursday, May 18th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios in downtown Juneau. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis. I get to do the show every Thursday. And our next guest is Michelle Morgan. She is the executive director of the Juno Stop Heroin Start Talking 501c3. It's a nonprofit.
Yes, we are.
Created in 2015. We're going to learn a little bit about the organization, what it does, and what's on the horizon. So welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jeff, for doing the important work that you do. So let's talk a little bit about the organization.
Okay. Juno Stop Heroin Start Talking started in September of 2015 when a dear friend of mine in his 20s died of heroin, and he was one of the six that we had that summer. And when I would see their parents of these children that died, they couldn't talk about their children dying. They were too ashamed. There was a stigma. And I, as a mother, I said, you know, we have to talk about this. So we made these stickers and we made bracelets and we did interviews. And what happened is the whole community came together. And now when you see people just meeting you, we all know that this is an issue. And we don't try to hide it anymore. We're trying to directly affect it and make this part of our community that we can handle, that we can cure in some way, at least the stigma part.
Address. Definitely.
Yeah, thank you. Address is the better word.
Okay. And so what does the organization do, Juno Stop Heroin Start Talking? What are the services provided?
We're just part of the community, and we have a Facebook page, and we bring awareness, and we try to bring, like this last time we went and are working with the high school children, students. We worked with Kelly McCormick's class, and we let them design shirts and hats and whatever they wanted. And we thought that was a great way to bring that awareness into the school. And we've done other things with the other schools. We'll be at the July 4th this year at Sandy Beach, and we'll have shirts and awareness and how to recognize overdoses. We're also working with the Health and Social Services. We are one of the distributors of Narcan, which is the medication that will stop an overdose. And we will deliver that to anyone. It's not just for heroin. Narcan also stops prescription drug opiate overdoses. So we've dispensed Narcan to people for their grandmother who are on pain meds. You know, any overdose that's from an opiate, Narcan can stop that overdose and save that person's life. So that's kind of our main push right now, is getting awareness in the schools, getting awareness to people, to families, removing the stigma, and then getting this medication out for the state that can stop an overdose.
That is a lot. That's all we do. That is a lot. Thank you, Michelle, for the important work that you're doing in the community. And I can't have you in the studio and not ask, how can you identify an overdose? What are the things that the public need to know to be aware of as far as perhaps signs of people using heroin and then the signs of overdose?
Well, I'm not a counselor or a doctor, but a lot of families know that their loved ones are using. There's, you know, telltale signs. They withdraw. Their pupils are small. Just agitation, just like any other thing that would take over your life. What we need to be aware of is that it's happening here. People are overdosing. And our hepatitis C rates in Southeast Alaska are up 490% in 5 years. From the virus being spread through needles, syringes, and so that is a big push for us. Is if we have our loved ones and we get them through this terrible ordeal of an addiction, will they then have hepatitis C for the rest of their life and have to deal with those consequences? So that's a big awareness push that people need to understand. Is it could affect the rest of your life.
Right. And what about the signs of overdosing?
Well, overdosing, you nod off. An overdose is the heroin goes onto your brain receptors and you actually forget to breathe. Your brain goes to sleep and you stop breathing. So one of the important things when someone's overdosing is, one, call 911. If you have Narcan, use your Narcan. And the other thing is, if you do have to perform CPR, the hands-only CPR is not effective because this person has actually stopped breathing. So, and Alaska does have a Good Samaritan law. So if you call 911 and you're not a huge drug dealer, and the police are involved in this more than I am, there's a Good Samaritan law. You will be protected. So they like the saying, don't run, call 911. So if our EMS and the first responders have Narcan, so they can save that person.
Wow. It is important work. So you have a Facebook page for people to stay tuned.
We do.
And to find out, if there's events coming up or what they could do and so on and so forth. And is there anything else we should know before we let you go?
Well, if you want Narcan, we have Narcan. You can call 209-1452. That's my cell phone, and we will deliver it to you. And I really want to stress that the Narcan is not just for heroin. So we're not going to come and say, you're using heroin. We take this as a lifesaver, as a fire extinguisher, that every family who has opiates in their house should have this antidote. I'm allergic to bees. I have an EpiPen. So it's kind of in the same vein. Call me, 209-1452. Ann or I will deliver you some Narcan. We need to know your age and your zip code. It's pretty easy. The other thing is that Juneau has been a really good community in coming together. We have a wonderful police force. We have a wonderful EMS, CCFR. And we have Rainforest Recovery at Bartlett Hospital has just started a really great outpatient program with medication-assisted treatment that we've been wanting for years. So we're very excited about that. We'll be handing out cards with our Narcan information and Rainforest Recovery information on the back.
That's great. And since the organization began in 2015, would you say that more people are using heroin? I mean, I don't know what kind of data you have. I know you're kind of an awareness campaign.
Well, I just received an email from CCFR, and what they're seeing, I'm not on the street, they are more than, is there's heroin happening and meth is happening too, methamphetamines. So we're getting poly drug use. It's not going away, but what I've found going into the schools is the ages are getting older. When we go into the middle school, not as many kids are familiar with this as they were, say, even 2 years ago. So in that sense, we feel victory.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much. Michelle Morgan of Juno Stop Heroin Start Talking. You could find them on Facebook. You could call
209-1452.
And they're doing really important work. Thanks for doing what you do.
Oh, thank you.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with Nancy DeCharney from the Juno Arts and Humanity Council for her Arts Up section of the show. Okay, it is 20 minutes to the hour, and I misspoke. We have the lovely Megan Chambers here instead of Nancy DeCharney, who's also lovely. She's here to talk about what's going on. But before we even start with Arts Up, so the Juno Arts and Humanities Council staff of six does an amazing job for Alaska's capital city. And this week they have the perks of listening to fantastic musicians, like world-renowned musicians, just like, you know, doing sound checks and doing a little rehearsal in the jack. So congratulations on your perks of your job this week. And I'm talking about the Juno Jazz and Classics musicians.
It's really hard to sit there and listen to beautiful music all day.
Really, really hard. It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it.
Luckily, I'm going to take one for the team. And
there you go. So, oh, by the way, speaking of Juno Jazz and Classics, of course, we had Evan Drachman and David Kusher on earlier on the show, but what we were just listening to was Gary Muttley, and he is playing tomorrow night at the Jack, and he's a world-renowned musician as well. So, Megan, what should people do this weekend?
All right. We've got lots of concerts and performances. Tonight is Rites of Spring. I'm sure you've talked about it today, but Stravinsky, piano, four hands. Very exciting. We've been listening to them practice, as we said. Friday, earlier on in the evening, the Canvas Art Studio and Gallery and Perseverance Theater have teamed up for This Is My Story. So,
and what is that?
It is stories of individuals experiencing disabilities that have been brought to the stage.
Cool.
So it seems really, really wonderfully interesting. I was excited to read about that. And there's two pay-as-you-can performances starting on Friday. And then a little bit later on, 7:30 to 9:30, is Jazz at the Jack, the Gary Motley Trio, with some favorite jazz standards and new songs. Then we go on to Saturday, which is a big day for us at the Jack. It's Community Day on campus. And I know someone talked about it a little bit earlier, but I'll just give some more details. It is 11 to 4, starts at 11. There's vendors, there's music, there's food, there's all kinds of fun info and activity booths. Some of the favorites are Diepack and the Salmon Prints and Touch Tanks that they do. We have art activities for kids. Jazz and Classics is a co-sponsor and producer of the event, along with Juno School District and UAS. And Jazz and Classics has a full day of music starting at 11, ending around 2:45 or 3. And then the Juno School District All-City Elementary Art Show winners will be announced at noon.
Cool.
And those art shows have been at libraries, whatever library is closer to the school. So the winners will be announced that day. Let's see, what else was I going to say about community? Oh, come use the back loop entrance. It's probably faster if you drive all the way down Mendenhall Loop Road and then back loop and get to that main parking lot. Just because construction's been a little bit busy along Glacier Highway. So please come to Community Day. It's a free event. There's all kinds of food and craft vendors there. We'll have information on the new Jack, wonderful new building we are fundraising for currently, and some other fun workshops. Speaking of workshops, we have a Paint Big, really big workshop happening in June. A visiting artist from California will be coming up, and it's open to all experience levels. It's a weekend in the middle of June, and you can sign up online.
No, that sounds wonderful.
Yep. And then moving on to some other workshops, I'll do a quick plug just because it's good to register early for this, but there's a Grantsmanship workshop in August. I know it's a little bit later on than this week, but we sponsor that with the Grantsmanship Center, and it's a week-long course and lots of good resources and training on how to write a grant, how to research
a successful grant.
Exactly.
Everyone can write a grant, but you want to write a successful grant.
Put your time in and do it well. So more info online on the Jack website or the Grantsmanship Center.
Cool. All right, let's go back to the weekend. So we have Community Day, and we wrapped up there around 4, and then where do we go?
Moving on to Sunday, one of Juno's favorites, Master Gardener Tour.
Oh.
So I'm reading my little thing here. One second. The tour gardens are from 12 to 3 p.m., and they're followed by a presentation and a panel discussion and a potluck. And it's here at K2. in the 360 room. And tickets are online at the Jack and Hearthside Books or southeastakmastergardeners.org. And then we have an evening on Ave Maria's, a beautiful choral concert out at the Shrine that is produced by Juno Lyric Opera, 30 treble voices singing songs in honor of women.
Oh, wow, that sounds lovely.
Really wonderful. Very affordable ticket prices and tickets at junoopera.org. And then it slows down later on in the week. Lots of city walking tours, meetings, etc.
Okay. All right. And then let's talk a little bit about the programs, the summer programs that the Jack puts on.
Yes, thank you. We start Rock Around the Block parties in June.
And what is that?
Those are every Friday. It's a collaboration between ourselves at the Jack, the Slam. We host it on their Pivot Plaza, that big plaza around Nimbus. We'll have live music there every Friday, really fun dance bands. First Fridays of the month, we'll have a beer garden at the Jack. Second Fridays, we'll have a pet photo booth. Third Fridays, we'll have mosquito markets, whatever you can sell out of the back of your trunk. And then fourth Fridays, or final Fridays, will be farmers markets with Panhandle Produce co-sponsoring those.
Nice.
And, of course, we're working with our lovely food trucks, Pucker Wilson's and Happy Camper, to have good food and fun specials those days.
That sounds good. And then let's talk a little bit about the new Jack building. Where are we with that?
We are actively fundraising right now. Nancy is actually currently down south, going to a fun meeting in L.A. And there's some wonderful new community presentations coming up next week, May
23rd, I think.
23rd and 24th.
The community.
Yep. I'm like picturing my Google Calendar in my head right now.
Right.
So some of those meetings are closed focus groups with user groups, people like sound and tech people that will get into the nitty-gritty. But the exciting news will be the newly updated designs presented by the architects from Northwind, Hacker, and Schellick, and that's open to the community in the evening at the Jack on Wednesday, next Wednesday.
Let's talk a little bit about those plans. So I think most of our audience listeners know where the Jack sits and adjacent to the studio that we're sitting in right now at the KTOO studios. What would the new building be like? What's going to happen to the current building?
The current building will come down and the new building will magically pop up.
Just like that?
After several years of construction. It's an incredible building designed by these user groups I was talking about. So right now we are operating all of our programming, concerts, et cetera, out of the National Guard Armory, which, of course, was not built to put concerts on or conference rooms or meetings.
Maybe to store ammunition and weapons.
that could be it.
Yes, it being an
we've
armory.
Done, I think, amazingly well with what we've got, but we're really excited to have a building that was made for us. And so this building includes a 300-seat performance hall, a wonderful gallery that's built to be a gallery and not a conference room or a random room on the side of the building, a gorgeous lobby shop. It'll have a cafe, outdoor seating. There's a new patio in the works, so that'll be really fun to look at. There's gorgeous artist renderings. And the whole thing is built with the surrounding environment of Juneau in mind. And so there's really nice open windows, views of the mountains, local art incorporated into it, and it's going to be a phenomenal facility.
And so if people are listening and they say, oh, you know, I wouldn't mind donating a little money to the Performing Arts Center, which is one of those iconic dreams of Juneau, I think.
Yes.
Where can they go?
They can go to thenewjack.org, and that is JACC because it's the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. And I will add that the new Jack is going to be built for you. And just like the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, we are a membership organization. And we really run on the resources and donations of the community. And this new project is not unlike that. So any little bit helps don't think you need to
donate
give some
big
huge amount of money that you might not have. So
give up a latte.
Yeah.
Start there.
Save a latte for 2 weeks. Save your latte money for 2 weeks and swap it out for a new Jack donation.
Okay. So let's say in the perfect world, this is going to happen soonish.
Mm-hmm.
And where do things take place during construction?
That's a great question. The goal of the Arts Council is to maintain all current programming. So we support a small staff, but we also support a community of artists, ticketing resources, publicity resources, and all that jazz. And so those programs won't cease to exist. Rentals will be a little bit harder without a building, for sure. But the gallery and lobby space, we're working on contingency plans for those. And, you know, the online world for lobby shop and gallery sales and viewings is a great asset at this point in our lives with technology. So,
do you know where the staff will be working out of at this point?
They are working on that right now. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. So the proposed timeline is June 2018, say goodbye to the old Jack, and June 2020, say hello to the new one.
Sounds great.
Yeah. With your help, we can do it, Juno.
That sounds great. All right. Well, Megan, thank you so much for coming across the street and telling us about what's going on. So it's the end of Juno Jazz and Classics. You should check it out tonight, tomorrow night, Saturday, Community Day. Sounds great. And
the new Jack will be at Community Day. So if you want to see some of those photos and talk to the movers and shakers, then come say hi out there at UAS.
That sounds great. And then the community forum, yet another one. Not
yep.
The ongoing. Yes, exactly. Okay, well, cool. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to wrap up the show. Was Richard Thompson. He will be playing the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival finale Saturday night at Centennial Hall, 7:30. So check that out. So tomorrow, tune in at 3 p.m. to listen to Andy Klein chat with Gary Motley about this weekend's Juno Jazz and Classic Concert. He'll be playing tomorrow night, and then he'll also be talking to Reed Stoops, Eric Boras, and Jamie Waste about a new fund set up to support parks, trails, and recreations. Highlights about an upcoming writer's workshop and details about the Alaska Youth Choir performance. All that and more with Andy Klein. Always a party tomorrow, every Friday at 3 o'clock on KTOO. Thanks for sharing your day with Jeff Brown, the producer and engineer of the show, and myself, Jim Pardis, your Thursday host. Right now, it is 56 degrees. We're looking at scattered rain showers tonight, and then tomorrow, we're looking at numerous rain showers, lows around 40, and then Saturday, we're also looking at numerous rain showers. Thanks for sharing your day. Have a good one.